Dreams, but what about creative dreaming? The ability to do incredible things. We're going to talk with Craig Sim Webb. He's back on Coast to Coast with his latest work, The Dreams Behind the Music. That'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, a pioneer in the lucid dream research at Stanford University and in Montreal. Craig Sim Webb has at least 25 years of experience researching dreams, consciousness, a couple decades of writing and teaching about dreams, lucid dreams as well. He was on with me a couple of years ago, one of his books, Dreams and Dying. Of course, we're talking about dreams behind the music as well. Fascinating work, Craig. I'm glad you're back. How have you been?
Hey, great to join you again, George. I've kind of been, we might say, in utero, birthing this 300-page baby. Lots of creative time, and now the blessing to share about that more with people and also enjoy life a little bit more, get out there.
Well, the baby is born, and it's a great book. Good job.
Oh, thanks very much. Thank you very much.
Reading good reviews on Amazon about it. And it different, too. You know, when we first started talking about dreams and dying, and as the subtitle was, The Benefits of Dreams in Relation to Death, this is a little different. This is a more upbeat work that you've done, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, dreams and death are pretty closely tied, right?
Yeah, they sure are.
One's overnight, but we definitely disappear. All our physical senses are still going theoretically, but we're not tuned to them, so they're probably pretty close. In this case, I think the creative dreams experience seems to be the creative dreams for many artists, not just musicians, any creative really. But they seem to come once we clear up the backlog, once we let go of some of the challenges. Often nightmares are a sign that we have emotional backlog or things that are unfinished business. And once we clear that out, often pretty quickly, once people address nightmares, then they get some pretty powerful creative inspirations.
Tell me about the work behind the dreams behind the music, because you know you key in on a lot of artists and industry executives tying in music with creativity and dreams. How did you find these people?
Well, some of them were kind of sent by synchronicity. Some of them I just looked up, interviewed. Some of the research is thanks to the dream-inspired company that we know of as Google.
Oh, yeah.
So Larry Page dreamt an idea that became the search engine we all use. So a lot of online research. And then over the years, you know, I guess a couple decades, as you mentioned, I've just been gathering, sometimes speaking to artists, and plenty dreaming of my own. I often dream music a few times a week or so. Have you ever dreamt any music, actual melodies, or maybe lyrics, George?
You know, it's kind of interesting that you say that, because at my some of my live events, Craig, I sing with a group, with a band.
Oh, right.
And one of the best ways to memorize the lyrics is to dream about them. And you,
right.
You know, you
sleep
just
learning.
You read them and off you let your dreams help you out. And I have found that's done a great difference for me. I don't necessarily hear the music in the dreams,
okay,
but I do see the lyrics.
So, okay, kind of deep sleep learning here,
yeah,
something like that.
Absolutely.
Well, you might be interested, Bono, who I guess many listeners know, part of U2. Actually had some similar kind of experience, except for him it ended up a little bit more as a new creative work. But an interesting story, like a dream-sparked collaboration. In this case, Bono was half awake, a little bit stressed before a performance at Wembley Arena with the band. And he was listening that night to In Blue Velvet, you know, the soundtrack by David Lynch from
yeah.
the movie. And on there appears, there's a song by Roy Orbison, In Dreams.
In Dreams. Great song. We play it a lot as a bumper
yeah.
song.
Yeah, yeah. And many folks don't know that was actually directly inspired by Roy Orbison's dreams. He dreamt of Elvis, and that was his big new hit. He woke up and said, wait a minute, Elvis doesn't have a song by that name. That's mine. But anyways, in this case, Bono was kind of half awake, half asleep, and he woke up in the morning with this line, mystery girl, she's a mystery to me. He kind of said, that sounds very Orbisonic, you know, Roy Orbison-like. So he checked with his bandmates that day during rehearsal. He actually played a few bars of his dream melody and said, hey, maybe I dreamt this. Maybe this is new. And they did the concert, and he was so into it that right in the dressing room after the concert, he started playing again and, I guess, getting new lyrics. And here's the strange part. There's a knock at the door. This is right after the concert, the same day, right? And the security guard says, Roy Orbison and his wife are here to see you.
Wow. Synchronicity.
He didn't know that Orbison was there.
He was a giant, too. Did you know that at one point, the Beatles were the warm-up act for Roy Orbison?
Yeah, yeah. I found that out during my research. I was like, wow, that's
isn't
a
that
pretty
cool?
Good credit.
That sure is. It sure is. So we wrapped up Halloween. Today was the Day of the Dead in Mexico.
Mm.
Tell me a little bit, because you've devoted a chapter in your book about artists who have dreamed about visits from their deceased family members.
Yeah, yeah. Or other deceased colleagues also.
Yeah.
Family's a big one. I bet you a lot of the listeners can relate. It's one of the most worldwide themes, you know, visits of the deceased. Dia de los Muertos, Halloween, All Saints Day here, is when the veils are a bit thinner. Maybe the internet connection's a little better. We can reach across the veil. In this case, there's so many interesting ones. I think I detailed over 20 pretty well-known artists. But one that's many people don't know is this song, Drops of Jupiter. You know that won the Grammy for Train?
Mm-hmm.
Now that she's back in the atmosphere, this one. Train woke up with a strong, you know, he was grieving his mother at the time, and a strong sense of, hey, maybe she's not really gone. Maybe she's somehow here. She's in the atmosphere. And kind of quickly wrote out this song that his producer, or I guess the record label, said, wow, right, just listening to the cassette, like mini demo that he did in his house, said, that's a number one Grammy hit right there. And so in his acceptance speech, which did win the Grammy, he said thanks very much to his mom, who probably from other levels helped inspire that one. So interesting how we can get help from family across the veil that really makes a difference in our lives, right?
They're there to help. They're there to help.
Absolutely.
How they do it and why they do it, I don't know. I think maybe there's unconditional love there that carries over. What do you think?
Yeah, sounds pretty good. And that's probably like the bridge, right?
Yeah.
The love itself is kind of the emotional conduit that they can reach through, I would say. Sounds pretty good to me. Example might also be Stevie Wonder. This is a very little known story, but you know, the love he had for his mom, Lula Hardaway, was like beyond any other relationship, most likely. And when she died in 2006, he said, wow, I've got to grieve for at least a year. So he told his manager, I guess his business.
That he was just done for a year.
I'm done, and just don't, you know, cancel all my dates. And then shortly he called them back and said, put all my dates back, and I'm going to start this tour next year. And they said, what happened? He said, well, my mom came in the dream and said, wow, don't stop sharing your message of love. You got to get out there, especially when you're an artist grieving. Share your true feelings. That's what people will resonate with.
I love that. I love that. Now, is everything a great dream, or are some of them nightmares?
Nightmares. Well, nightmares can be great. If we interpret it, I would say, correctly. People can check online there on the website. CraigWebb.ca has it. But there's an article, Nightmares? Lucky you. And people kind of say often, I don't want nightmares. What do you mean, lucky? And I say, okay, well, you might want the oil light on your car, though, right? And they say, yeah, it's helpful. Or the smoke alarm.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want it to go off too often, but when it does, you're really grateful. Because it's a warning. So generally nightmares come as a warning. Hey, something's out of whack in the psyche. There's a lesson not learned, emotional business not finished. If we get the message, then we can probably avoid worse stuff in our lives, like a ruined relationship or a sickness or something. They kind of come as an early warning. So artists sometimes use them for creative inspiration, though, George.
How so?
Well, different examples. I think, remember we had James Cameron on here?
Oh, yeah.
A few years ago, and he shared that his whole film, Terminator, was inspired directly by a nightmare. So that's pretty interesting. I guess creative vision from something that's upsetting. Taylor Swift, many of the fans know this pretty famous artist now. She's used nightmares to inspire her song. In this case, she actually heard the screeching, or she actually screeched, stay, in a kind of socially embarrassing dream with someone. And next day she says, well, I guess I'll just use the dark stuff of my psyche, the shadow here. And she included it in the chorus in her new album. And she says she has nightmares about her tour not being ready. So it helps her, motivates her to plan early. So she kind of gets that warning, it sounds like.
What creates the nightmare?
Well, in that case for Taylor, maybe stress in life. She just kind of percolates into dreams. But have you ever had that dream late for the exam or unprepared, or sometimes radio announcers like dead air or can't speak? You ever had that one?
No, thank God, not yet.
Oh, good, good. Well, it sounds like you're prepared.
That would be a nightmare.
A nightmare, yes. Or a daymare if it happened during. But I think it's a variation on that. In this case, it's sort of showing some waking stress for sure. But also a guidance dream of make sure you're prepared on time. Don't miss the deadline if you're in an exam, some upcoming deadline, a test in your life, or maybe a deadline of presenting at work. Get the message and be forewarned and proactive about it, right?
My favorite dreams are the dreams of premonitions, things to be. Did you come across any famous artists who had those?
There's plenty. I've had those quite often. Have you ever had tuned into something that you felt came true?
Oh, accurately? Yeah, absolutely.
Very common. And research shows that 1 out of 3 people will say yes to that, which actually is quite a surprising number, or even more. In this case, there's many examples. Some are definitely sensational here, a bit shocking, but are many people's favorite artists here. John Lennon actually had 2 premonitions about his own murder, which put together could be fairly predictive.
Well, was it accurate?
In one, he was in the restaurant with Yoko Ono, and a chubby stranger wearing glasses came in with a loaded revolver, and the police came to warn him, be careful of this man. And he woke up pretty upset, wishing he remembered more of the dream. It was about a year before. And then about a month later, he actually dreamt of reading his own obituary and that he was responsible for his own murder outside the Dakota, killed by a man with a revolver. So put the two together, and unfortunately, we get the terrible event of his death.
What creates the premonition, Craig? I mean, does somebody send us this message? What happens?
Well, I can put together or put out there some of my thoughts and ideas about it. You know, I have my degree in physics.
Mm-hmm.
I try to understand things.
See, I would say we somehow tap into the wireless internet out there that is the universe. And
right,
we
right.
cross paths with certain events that are out there, and our dreams pick them up. Hence, premonitions.
Like an inner antenna that kind of tunes
yeah.
to it. Yeah, and in physics, we'll call it probable futures. They're not guaranteed, but some of them are very likely, right? So, yeah, we can pick it up. The nice thing about dreams and what seems to make sense is they're free of time. You know, our physical senses are mostly turned off when we sleep. So the information comes through a channel that's free of time. So it's not too surprising that we could tune into, let's say, events that are in the future, sometimes just mental wanderings or things we're stressed about, but sometimes surprising accurate, like John Lennon's story we just shared. So I'm with you on that. We tune into probable events coming soon to a waking theater near you or something like that.
Have great songs been developed in dreams?
Oh, wow, there's just so many hits. How about Volare? You know that one?
Oh, yeah. Whoa.
A little bit older, but that was the first Grammy for Song of the Year.
Dean Martin sang that, too, didn't he?
Yeah. There was a lot of cover versions for that one. And those, two writers of that one, Italians, were inspired by, a Chianti, a wine-induced dream where the original composer fell asleep waiting for his friend to show up, and then when he showed up, he was too excited, and he said, let's not go to the beach, let's write this song, which they did for 3 days and had humongous success. So one example from the past there, and plenty of others. Yeah, I mentioned Train, you got a Grammy-winning hit. The Beatles,
mm-hmm.
the biggest hits. Paul McCartney's Yesterday, Let It Be. You know Paul's mother's name?
I do not.
I wake up to the sound of music. Mother Mary next to me was not
Mary.
The virgin in sort of symbolic terms, but it's actually Paul's mother Mary saying, Paul, yeah, the Beatles are going through a tough time. Let it be.
Huh. And he picks up on that.
The artist in him said, wow, if this really resonates with me, because, he had such a strong bond with his mom, I bet you people resonate. I got to write a song about it.
You have talked about how some artists have had the same dream on the same night. How in the heck does that happen?
Wow. Well, I guess you mentioned before there's the internet.
Yeah.
It's an analogy.
We all hook into it.
Yeah, we're tuned. When we turn off the physical senses, it's easier. But even in waking life, right? Intuition, gut feeling, impulses that we follow. In this case, one of these big tuners, one of the rock shamans of the modern era, Mr. McCartney, was having a dream of digging up a tin can, I think, in the backyard.
A tin can.
Just for quite a while.
Sounds like Vegas vacation.
Pardon?
Sounds like Vegas vacation, where he was looking for money in
That's good intuition.
Eddie's backyard.
It was very good intuition there, George. So you got your internet connection going full here.
That's right.
Because after he met Lennon, he said, wow, it's strange. I always had this digging up the tin can dream, but now it's digging up gold coins, then one, then another. And he just happened to tell John Lennon, I had this pretty interesting change to a dream I've always had. And Lennon almost flipped out. He said, I just had the same exact dream this morning. Digging up gold coins in the backyard? Yep. And, you know, the $500 million, the net worth McCartney commented, maybe that dream came true with us working together.
Well, how many times have you told somebody something and that person says, I was just thinking of that? Or, you know, and it just happens all the time. Or I was just about to tell you that. And, and again, that's where my theory of the wireless internet comes in, that we are all connected. We're all wirelessly to each other.
Absolutely. And I would say the analogy can really work. You know, as above, so below, says the Upanishads and many of the sacred texts, Bible, etc. So anything that appears in the world has an inner version, a correlate that sort of prints out physically as a, I guess, technology development in this case. So I'm not surprised that there's an inner version of something like Skype. You know, Lennon can tune to McCartney and vice versa, or we can tune into a friend visiting that day. Ever dreamt of someone and then met them that day and not seen them for a few years?
Yeah.
Before?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Why is it that music is tied into this?
Well, the interesting thing we have in English, we use this word, the muse, often referred to as our creative inspiration, or sometimes just the intuition. So even in the language itself, there's a bit of a hint that we might get that. My experience of music is that it actually acts as one of my clearest intuitions. I guess when I'm walking around, even in the daytime, or when I wake up from a dream with a song, the actual lyrics running through my mind at that time are a very direct intuition, I guess, from the muse, but through music language. So maybe the visual, and visuals are kind of a symbol of knowing.
Does music, though, enhance the dream?
I don't know if it enhances the dream. It probably means our recall's improved. Because we can remember music. Many people don't remember music, but if you do, then that's great. But if you don't, it's actually quite easy. 6 out of 7 of my students, because I lead online teleclasses, on the first night that they tried the experiment, dreamt music and hadn't really ever dreamt it, or not recently. So it's basically there for the asking. So I imagine greater recall means some music can come in, maybe even smell, touch. You ever had smell or touch in dreams?
Yes.
Yep. You've got a pretty clear internet connection, I'd say, internet.
And sometimes in my dreams, I'm always like, I am in life observing something where what you can see is your arms, but you can't see your face, obviously. And it's the same in the dreams for me. What about you?
Wow. So observing, like more.
I never see myself in the dream. That's my point. I mean, I'll see my body as I see it now. You know, I can see my legs and my arms, but I don't see myself standing, you know, 10 feet away.
Okay, so no, like a third person watching George.
No, I've never seen myself in a dream.
Sort of a dual perspective of watcher and actor. Some people have it. I actually use that see the body technique to become lucid often, or conscious in the dream, looking at the hands, which many of the listeners might have tried.
Hold on for a second, Craig. We'll come back, talk more about dreams and music. We've got a couple clips that we took from you that we're going to play when we come back. Okay, we're back. Craig Sim Webb with us as we're talking about his latest work, The Dreams Behind the Music. How important do you think these songs have been because of dreams, Craig?
Well, I would say they've influenced our culture in pretty significant ways, sometimes invisible, I'd say. Most of the, there's like over 200 artists covered in the book, and many of the artists' names are super well known. The songs or the compositions for some of the, I guess, classical artists are very well known, but very few people know the link of the process. So that was kind of the idea. Hey, wait a minute, if you want something that's really going to take your career to the next level, why not really tune into the source spring for creativity, dreams?
Mm-hmm. We've got a couple clips that we picked from your repertoire, and I'm going to play them, and then you can explain just what they are. So here's just one of them. Hey, Craig, so tell me about that. Was there anything special to that?
Morpheon. It has a little, that's the title there, Morpheon. Has a little connection with Morpheus. And originally, there was an opportunity to submit music for the Matrix 3 soundtrack.
All right, yeah.
And so that was kind of the motivation.
But did that come in a dream or what?
There's actually a few recurring themes. You know how we have recurring characters or settings? You must have had that in dreams.
Yes.
Even recurring scenarios like themes. In this case, there's such a thing as recurring melodies or musical elements or soundscapes. So I had this kind of descending thirds of da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da and a few others that I incorporated into that song, and also kind of made it matrixy, a little bit electronic rock to try to fit the soundtrack. Who knows? Something that was fun to create and maybe touches some people.
Indigenous people always, or Buddhas, those who practiced Buddhism, they chanted. And to me, that's music. Do you see any tie-in with that in dreams?
Absolutely. There's so many indigenous cultures that tune in. Example, ancient Celts would go on what I call song quests to kind of do their coming of age and tune into their melody, their tone. Zulu shamans, often connected with music for healing ceremonies. The Temiar or the Sungoy of Malaysia, same thing. Australian Aborigines, lots of First Nations in America, too, will use songs in healing ritual or sing them during times of war or when they need protection. So I would say it's a pretty intrinsic part of many natural cultures.
These 200 artists that you highlighted, what is the single most related aspect of all of the things they did? What's that point where there's a similarity there?
Yeah, I did find some pretty interesting, like, overarching data, metadata of gathering so many. And one of the things I'd say that sticks out mostly is there seems to be a real power and ease just in getting a, for lack of a better word, a dream download song or lyric inspiration. And that not in all cases, but in many cases, the work that came from that dream would come out very easily and usually within a very short time. In fact, like Jimmy Webb, you know, this artist, pretty well known as a songwriter, but wrote songs for Johnny Cash and many others.
Mm-hmm.
He had a powerful nightmare in this case, actually, about being chased, you know, the pursuit nightmare. 4 out of 5 listeners probably have.
We all have those.
And he wrote that right away. He got up in his hotel suite, wrote it at the piano. Fortunately, there was a piano. And he said, I got it, the direct download right away, and finished the lyrics. All about reincarnation, actually, which is interesting. The Highwayman. And he recorded it, then Glenn Campbell did, and it eventually inspired this whole supergroup called The Highwaymen with Johnny Cash, Kris Kristofferson, Willie Nelson, and many others. So it had a powerful kind of alchemical sound. So songs recorded right away that come with ease would be one big theme.
What do you think of dreams overall? Why do we dream?
Well, probably a natural physiological cycle. Like you said before, tuning into the internet, checking the probable futures for our days to come of what looks interesting, what looks like a good lesson or a bright future, hopefully. So that's one thing. I guess learning has scientifically been proven to be a function of dreams. Learning skills, example, the Olympic ski team, the aerial ski team, a lot of people don't know, in Germany they actually use lucid dreaming to practice skills, I guess aerial maneuvers, before they try them out physically, even to this day. So learning physical skills, even in this case, because the research that I was part of at Stanford proved the body, the physiology, the neurons, the heart rate and everything, is actually following the dream activity very closely, except for the big muscles. But we're sort of learning as we sleep, and when you're conscious, you can choose what you want to learn.
The fact that so many musical dreams contributed to these great artists, some of them winning Grammy Awards and everything else. What does that tell you about the creativeness of dreams?
Well, I would say the music especially comes in as sort of a download without as much mental aspect there. It sort of comes pure, and the artist hopefully shares it pretty pure and accurately. If it's a melody, otherwise it might come as lyrics, but more poetic and artistic, right? So I think it comes a little less distorted, perhaps, than some other things in our life when we think it through or stress about it and things. So that, you know, pure, I guess, element of the self or the dreaming wisdom, the unconscious, undistorted, speaks to a lot of people in this case, I think, through major hit songs. And like you said, the indigenous, the shamans from different traditions, and I guess the Tibetan monks you mentioned, that when we're really tuned like that to the earth, they'll have super healing songs, rituals, dances that come in their dreams. In the West, we may not really think of it, but we have our shamans, and we call them rock and roll stars. And most people didn't know that they're often tuning in and dreaming their music just like worldwide indigenous cultures.
You have been a pioneer in lucid dreaming, and of course, lucid dreaming is the ability to know that you are in a dream. Did you utilize any of that in some of your work?
I often tune into, I guess, some of the different principles and dreams that I write about or speak about. In this case, for the book, The Dreams Behind the Music, I'll share one particularly interesting dream because it points to this whole segment of dreamers and I think probably experiences a lot of the listeners are having. In this case, my dream was that I saw this super beautiful ribbon kind of, I guess, rose petals that were, or flower petals that were yellow that turned into this beautiful Christmas ribbon of red and gold. And there was this melody playing. And the interesting part, and this is during the writing of the book, you know, as I gently kind of wake, you know, very slowly into wakefulness, I realize, oh, wait a minute, the actual music I'm hearing is the visuals of the beautiful red gold tassels and rose petals. It's not like just a soundtrack. It's actually the same thing coming through a different channel, in this case, hearing. And I kind of said, wow, that was a nice revelation about synesthesia, you know, mixing of the senses. You ever have any of that, like hearing music or seeing music and hearing color or anything like
that? No, I don't.
You'd be surprised how many of the, I guess, rock and roll shamans here of our popular culture, even the composers from past era, actually see music, like Mozart. He said he saw the whole composition from start to finish in all its parts. It would have to be played out later linearly, but he said he saw all in one moment and was a real feast for the eyes.
That's a gift, I think, to be able to do that.
Yeah, some kind of special inner perception that crosses the boundaries of physical senses, and many artists have that, so I don't think it's necessarily a detriment.
No, not at all. Let's get back to those who dream creatively. Tell us a few stories about something like that.
Well, there's our friend Sting across the big pond there from America, who often uses dreams. In fact, he has a nice quote that I like. Put it up there at the front of the book. It says, any artist who doesn't use dreams in their creative work is throwing away half their potential.
I would believe that.
At least half, I think he says. So from somebody who's earned his right to make some pretty big statements, that comes pretty strong. He dreamt various songs, but one of the strong ones that we all know as a Grammy winner for Song of the Year was Every Breath You Take.
Oh, yeah. He did that in a dream?
Yes, he said he got the line, Every Breath You Take, woke up with it. And as is kind of wise here, a little kind of hidden tip for listeners if you're getting creative dreams of music or other things, you know, for your work or for writing or dance or anything. He said right there in the middle of the night, he crafted the song within a few hours, most of it, and then polished it a little bit later. So he kind of caught it fresh, which I think is important.
Does music create intuition or does intuition create the music?
They're definitely tied. I don't know. What would you say?
I don't know. I would think that the intuition is something that comes first.
Yeah, I think they're probably tied pretty closely. For example, even the language plays it out. This is one of the things that I was just about finished the book, and it almost changed the title, you know, which I'd had for a while. I discovered that the old English word dream, with a line over the E, so I don't know how you pronounce that, but dream or something. Actually,
you sound a little like Dracula when you said that.
Oh, Dracula. It means joy and it means music. So that kind of ties together your question there. So intuition, kind of a joyful expression of our spontaneity. Dreaming, intuition in the daytime, we call dreams at night. And then music are pretty closely tied, even just from words. In Chinese, they have the symbol and the letter lei, which also means joy and music, which we might not think are connected, but it's right there in the language, even multiple cultures. So I'd say they're pretty tied.
When you also wrote the book Dreams and Dying, yeah, you talked about the benefits of the relationship with death and that tie. And I want to ask you a few questions about that because it has a tie into some of the music too. But what are the benefits of dreams in relationship to death?
In that audiobook, I list about a dozen different ways that dreams can be helpful, both for those in transition, I guess, who are actually dying. Helping let go of unfinished business, sometimes freeing their soul. And then also for the living, to help them find peace with either the person's actual process of dying, make peace with the family. There was a few examples of how to heal the bonds before the person leaves. Or after the person has, I like to say, graduated from Earth, how to connect with the soul, like I guess like Stevie Wonder did. He wasn't as worried about his mom because she came back to chide him and say, hey, keep going on your music. Don't stop for a year. So I believe that it brings some healing, at least for unfinished business. In some cases, I guess people who are a little more versed in shamanic or dreaming arts, one woman that I spoke to who was a shaman said she was really upset losing her dad, and he was there on his deathbed with, you know, like a really bad cancer. And she said, I was journeying with him every night. And even that night when he was just when he graduated, we left the hospital and I journeyed to see him. And she said, I saw him, but he said, let me go. I got to head to the other side now. I love you, but just let me go on my journey. And so she took that, I guess, inner journey, sort of dreamlike journey, as pretty important guidance to what we might not think, obviously, because we still have the love, right?
How do you recall your dreams, Craig?
Oh, tips. Yeah, that'd be great, have the listeners get tuned into the internet. Well, there's some great tips there. You can check out craigwebb.ca for a whole article about that, but we'll give a few. One way is to kind of keep the physical senses lower. So have our eyes closed, or by accident, if we opened them when we woke up, just shut them again.
Mm-hmm.
Try to make sure not to move the physical body, so touch or like balance, moving around, I guess the blood flow in the brain, etc., can really disturb those, you know, pretty delicate dream memories. Ideally, don't wake up to an alarm, so keep the sound lower. And if we want to set a body clock, we can usually do that. Set the body clock 15 minutes before the actual alarm's going to go off. Hey, an intention, let's say, I want to wake up and remember my dreams. Do you ever use that kind of body clock to wake up at a certain
time? Yes, all the time.
And it's pretty right on to the minute.
It's almost like you picture the clock at a certain time, and bang, you wake up right there.
Yeah, yeah.
I do, at least. It works for me.
Yeah, yeah.
If I really, really had the guts, though, I'd never do a wake-up call at a hotel. I'd let that body clock do it, but that's pretty gutsy.
That's gutsy. You know what? You just sparked me of an interesting story, because I've explored that principle, too, of trying to take it to the limit. And strange enough here, George's intuition, right?
Yeah.
I was at a hotel in Vancouver, I guess part of my travels and speaking and things. And I woke up and I thought, okay, I'll just wake up on body clock. But I do have a flight this day. And right away, that first waking thought, by the way, a little tip here, that's usually a pretty good, summary.
Indicator.
Or executive summary of the dream. It said, don't look at your watch or any clock before the plane flight today. You woke up at the perfect time, trust it.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I might miss the flight. I went through the standard stressors, but I said, okay, I'll try it. What's the worst case? I'll probably get on a later flight. And I did, just to be honest, full disclosure, I did check once I was in the taxi to the airport because I couldn't change the timing then. And I saw that, wow, I'm actually 10 minutes early, but surprisingly right on time for something that was 4 hours later.
Well, what I do now is I do the wake-up call. Okay, let's say 8 o'clock in the morning,
reception.
And I'll set my body clock at 7:58, and sure enough, I wake up before the wake-up call.
Perfect, perfect. And I encourage listeners to try that. Probably people say, well, that's kind of weird. Just try it. You know, you don't have to trust us.
That's right. I want to play another quick little clip that we've got of your music.
Oh, great.
Wherever I've been in my life, I've never felt as good.
Is this you?
As when I'm with you. From a dreamless melody just sprang into my life.
Yeah. All right, was that you, Rick?
Yeah, that first line that you hear there, kind of the hook they call it in
yeah.
music. Wherever I've been in my life, I've never felt as good.
Now, did you have a dream of that song?
Well, that came. Here's an interesting little principle, George. I like that question because I just got the hook, sort of like a teaser, maybe a product sample of what could be. But I wrote it down. It was a powerful dream, and I said, wow, maybe I'll make this one day. It took a few months, but then I decided, okay, I'll actually record it. But once I started recording and, I guess, piecing together more lyrics and stuff about lucid dreaming in that case, I actually had more dreams that came. So after the commitment, other dreams guided me of, hey, make it a little more the distortion guitar, more rock and roll and stuff. So it's almost like once we commit to creating something or acting on a dream, we get further help. But otherwise, probably not.
Here are some of the people that you highlight who have had these kind of dream encounters. Paul McCartney, John Lennon, Billy Joel, Sting, Beyonce, Taylor Swift, Drake, U2, Stevie Wonder, Peter Gabriel, Michael Jackson, Diana Ross, The Rolling Stones, Johnny Cash, The Black Eyed Peas, Ziggy Marley, Paul Simon, Pete Seeger, Cole Porter, that's going way back, Louis Armstrong, yeah. Beethoven, that's going way back too, Mozart, Richard Wagner, Igor Stravinsky as well. It's amazing they all had this creativeness when it had to do with music.
It's powerful, and perhaps, you know, I don't think you necessarily have to have that dreaming channel, but it strikes me with a pretty star-studded list there that those who are able to, I guess, connect like that to the internet, as you said, are really the ones tuning in well, and probably they're the ones who are going to get some really powerful, I guess, seeds that they turn into songs through action and reach many people because there's some kind of universal truth in there.
Yes.
One of the people I interviewed, I think you've had him on the show before, Richard Bach.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Indeed, indeed.
I liked him.
That came from a dream.
That's right. No, you're right about that. Hey, Craig, stay with us. We're going to take a break, come back and chat more with you. Plus, we'll open up the phone lines. He's an expert in lucid dreaming as well, so make the call when we're talking about dreams right here tonight on Coast to Coast AM.